Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, our guest is Dave Brierley Jones. He's the CEO of Playout One. Playout One's pretty cool. It does some really neat things, and there's a cloud version as well. You're going to want to find out about it and web-based voice tracking. It's all coming up next on TWiRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, online at nautel.com/webinars. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower right there. And hey, let me turn my camera just a bit here. I finally have gotten a little bit of a microphone display going on here. Oh, you can't see it too well. It's too dark. But I've got several mics under the lamp there, and I'm working on my mic collection. Some of them are perfectly good mics. Others are mics that, yeah, you wouldn't really want to use. And I'm always torn whether to use the Sennheiser or my Heil PR40. I really like them both. Anyway, welcome in. This Week in Radio Tech, our 516th episode. And today, Chris Tobin can't be with us. He does send his love and affection to all of you, but he's doing a jazz concert, doing the televising and the audio and all that. So maybe he can tell us about it next week. But that's okay. We've got a great guest on, and our guest and I have already chatted a few times, and each time turned into an hour chat. So we have plenty to talk about. Our guest, I'll go ahead and bring him in, is Dave Brierley Jones. Dave, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech.
Hey, Kirk. Good to be here.
It's good to see you. You're the CEO of an automation company. Tell us a little bit about Playout One.
Yeah, so over the past 7 years, we've been building a new radio automation system, one that, you know, when you see it, you'll see the familiarity with what's already out there on the market. But we wanted to build something that is going to adapt to the future. And I mean, just look at the past 8 months, how different things are. People are working from home. Some people may never even come back to their facilities. So we've been building some new modules over the past 8 months to try and sort of tackle the studio of the future, as I think we're going to talk about over the next hour or so.
That is an interesting concept. And there are certainly a lot of different broadcast automation systems on the market. And, you know, we tend to work best with the ones that we're familiar with which we're familiar. But it's kind of refreshing to see a fairly new system out there that was apparently designed to adapt, as things move forward. And so I've, become a little bit familiar with Playout One, and I think there's some cool features about it that we're going to talk about. But we're not only going to talk about the features and what Playout One does, but we're also going to talk about the motivation for your development of it. And we're going to talk about just how you become informed of how the marketplace changes, you know, about how our workflows change and how you take that information and adapt it into the tool that so many of us need to use every single day to make radio. I'd also like to really try to continue to dispel the myth that automation ruins radio. It can. But automation can also make radio a lot better by letting people not have to worry about the things that you would have to worry about with some automation systems, but with the older systems that we had. I was a disc jockey when we literally played records. I played 45s and 33 LPs and sometimes music on cart, and we were busy, you know, every 2.5, 3.5, 4.5 minutes or so, we were busy doing something. So we're going to get into some motivations like that, plus talk about the technology involved too and how it's applicable. It's all coming up on This Week in Radio Tech. But right now, I want to tell you about Nautel. Man, they're still doing it. They are doing their Transmission Talk Tuesdays, and these are roundtable discussions, and that means that you get to participate. Apparently, when Jeff Welton sees me in the audience, He typically ends up calling on me, and you know, he can call on you too, or you can raise your hand if you've got a story to tell or something to add that would be helpful to the whole group. So it's a really participatory kind of event. Well, this coming Tuesday, November 3rd, now that's election day here in the U.S. So some people take the day off. Some people go stand in line all morning. I'll probably be doing that because I think I missed early voting here in Nashville. So it's happening at noon Eastern time, and that's 11 o'clock here in the Central time zone where I am. They're celebrating 100 years of radio. So we'll be talking about 100 years of radio. And I'm sure some of you have stories to tell, but the guests who are joining Jeff Welton are Beth Mann. She's one of the guests. If you're familiar with this show, you've met Beth Mann. She owns some radio stations in Kentucky and has a beautiful museum of old radios. Also, Maynard Meyer is going to be on the show, and John Schneider will be on the show. More industry greats along with Jeff Welton. And you're on the show too. It's a discussion of what's changed our industry, what stayed the same, what techniques have stood the test of time, and what has become replaced by newer technology. It's going to be fun. Historians, as well as maybe some younger folks participating too. I can't wait for young folks to participate and give us their perspective on broadcasting over the past 100 years. So check it out. You want to go to nautel.com/webinars. Nautel.com/webinars. Get yourself registered. It's not actually a webinar, but that's the web link. Nautel.com/webinar. Sign up for 100 years of radio during Transmission Talk Tuesday. All right. I hope you'll be there. I will be there. I might be there standing in line at the voting place. All right. Let's get on with the show. Dave Brierley Jones is with us, and I got to meet Dave, just a couple weeks ago, virtually, because we are experimenting with some automation systems at my own radio stations, and we're really liking some of the things that we see in Playout One. So Dave, listen, you seem like a young guy. You really weren't playing 45 RPM records on the radio back in the late 70s, early 80s like I was. Tell me how you decided to get involved with designing a radio automation system.
Well, it started, as I said, 7 years ago. Me and two of my friends, Chris and Phil, we were sat in a pub, a British pub. And as you do in British pubs, you drink a lot, you chat a lot, and often the topic of the talk reflects the jobs you were doing. And as we're all radio guys, you know, I was a producer, a presenter. Chris and Phil have all been presenters. We were just debating and saying, you know, wouldn't it be good if there was an automation system that could do this, if it could do that? You know, we're sick of all these tasks we've got to do every week. We could be doing other things. So 1 hour turned into 2 hours, 2 hour turned into 4 hours. And then by the end of it, we had this plan of, wow, we've got an automation system. So we've been sort of under the radar for the past 7 years. We've been tweaking, developing. We've had interest as those 7 years have been going. Right now, I think we're in 400 stations across the world. So we have two versions, Playout One Pro, which is designed for broadcast, and you'll find features in there such as web voice tracking, traffic merging, other tools that you would need in a broadcast station. And then we have a standard version, which is for the hobbyist and the home use. So we have a lot of podcasters who use it, a lot of people who like to prep shows, long form shows use it. And the two versions really work quite well. And here we are today with 400 stations. We get a lot of feedback, which is great, not just from our clients in Europe and North America, but also right across the world. So it's a real melting pot of radio ideas. And that's what I think makes it special.
It's been my experience that some automation systems, and not picking on anybody, I worked for Scott Studios back in the mid 90s. So I was very familiar with the horrible difficulty of moving from ISA bus slots to EISA bus slots before we even had PCI bus slots in computers. And I mean, it was a pain. We would go through audio cards that would work in this EISA slot and not in this EISA slot. Nightmares of trying to get things to work together. And thankfully, the computer hardware industry is past most of that. You know, most things do work together okay. But what I want to get at is this. It seems like some of the legacy automation systems don't seem to, at least not visually and not intuitively, take advantage of functionalities and conveniences that are already built into Windows. And say what you want about Windows. You like it, you don't like it. There's a whole lot of fairly mission critical stuff that runs on Windows. Hey, I'm a meteorologist. I've worked on television stations, and we all used Windows computers for our on-air displays. And you know what? They worked, 364 and a half days out of the year. Once in a while we get a glitch. And it just seems to me like Playout 1, from what I've played with it, you seem to utilize conveniences and features that are built into Windows. You're not working against Windows or trying to drag along old functionalities. You're up to date with what Windows does now. Is my impression somewhat correct in that regard?
Yeah, so because the code base is, fairly new, we've been able to utilize the technologies that you found in Windows 7, Windows 10, as we know now. we sometimes, get caught out by Windows, as most automation and critical systems do with those dreaded 3 a.m. updates. But we have a great setup and installation document that turns off those nasty little Windows things that cause the problem, certainly to the broadcast industry. And, with the advances in the audio technology, audio over IP, for example, we as a vendor don't have to do that much anymore to interface direct with those technologies, because Windows handles a lot of it, which is really, really smart and makes our life certainly easier.
Well, in fact, that's how my radio stations, the ones that are using Playout 1, we've installed the Axia IP driver, and it couldn't have been easier. Just went right in. I either bought a computer that had two network connections already on it, or another computer, an off-lease computer I bought, and just added a second network card to it, a really good Intel card. And it just plays right away. No sound card inside, network connection to the rest of the network, and it just shows up like audio over IP does. So that's a real convenience. I wanted to ask you about you seem to, in a standalone situation, and right now I have two radio stations that are using Playout 1 in standalone situations. There's not a server. It's just the one computer that is doing a number of things. You mentioned voice tracking already, web-based voice tracking. We'll delve more into that later. But do you find that you can try to do too much in one box, or are today's, i5, i7 processors, are they good enough to be able to multitask this way and work pretty reliably? And of course, I have found they have, but tell me why that is, why that works pretty well these days.
Yeah, so it depends on what you're trying to do. If you're trying to run, for example, a web voice tracking server, multiple stations, our auto importer, you're trying to do some network switching as well, all on the one machine, even the best machine today is going to struggle a little bit. So we always recommend having two machines, one acting as a server. And when I say server to our clients, I don't mean a great big honking Dell that, takes two men to lift and put in a rack, but just a computer, acting as a server. And that contains all the apps, that contains the services that keep everything ticking along. And then in the studio, you've just got a nice machine that its main job, and it's an important job, is to just play the audio. Keep things going, or as I say, keep the meters waggling. So that's the preferred sort of configuration. We do have clients that run everything on one box, and they're utilizing, today's i7 machines with, typically 16 gig of RAM in, and they run just fine. But that's the preferred model if it can be done.
Okay, so my two standalone stations aren't necessarily the preferred model, but they do work. And one of our stations is in Hawaii, and it's been working fine for over 2 years now, almost 2.5 years. So obviously that does work. But you do like the server and Playout model. And if the server's doing some things like the web voice tracking, which we'll get to, I'm sorry, hang on a second. Had a noise coming in here. I see. And we've got if you have a multi-station operation, then you're definitely going to want to have the server and the Playout client architecture, right?
Yeah, it's just about spreading the load. What we tend to find is because there are a number of modules with Playout 1 that you can choose to enable, it's best to keep those tucked out the way of someone in the studio who's trying to do a show, clicking around maybe where they shouldn't. So to have all that on the back end where it's out the way and is only accessible to those who need it, it just allows the studio machine to again, do that one job that it needs to do really, really well. And that's play that audio and keep those meters waggling.
There's nothing special about Windows that's needed to operate reliably with your Playout 1. Is there just ordinary Windows 10, what, Pro or Enterprise?
Yeah, Windows 10 Pro, we do tweak it a little bit. So we, you know, turn off Windows updates. We disable some other functions within Windows. A Minecraft server, for example, or a Minecraft game isn't really useful to, you know, someone who's trying to present a radio program. So there are little tweaks we make. But yeah, you can go to Best Buy, or if you're in the UK, you can go to a PC World, buy a computer off the shelf, and one of those is just going to be fine.
I know some disc jockeys who are going to be pretty disappointed not to have the Minecraft server on their Playout.
I suppose it depends how many songs you've got in a row, isn't it?
You're a cruel, hard man, Dave. All right. So as we move along, we're going to talk about this web voice tracking, because I find that, and I know, you know, Playout One's not the only one that does this, but I find this to be just so useful, and you don't have to install any software. In other words, a disc jockey, a presenter, if you will, can just use their computer at home, a laptop, and have a microphone connected to it and some headphones, and do really high quality voice tracking. So we're gonna take a tour of that in just a little bit. This Week in Radio Tech, number 516, with me, Kirk Harnack, and Dave Brierley Jones. He is the CEO at Playout One, and we're gonna get a tour of Playout One. And again, here are some about this web voice tracking and some of the other things that this software can do. Also, we're going to learn some of the technicalities. Dave's going to talk to us about databases, database management, why that's critical in an automation system, and then some of the additional modules that just go right in to do, for example, streaming, even audio processing, and of course, FTP client to go get programs off the web, as we often do, and even RDS data. So all that is coming up on This Week in Radio Tech. You're going to want to understand really well how this the system works and all the stuff that can go in it. Our show is brought to you in part by another company that's based in England, and that's our friends at Broadcast Bionics. And I want to let them tell you about their really cool X-Screen call screening software. Let's check it out.
X-Screen 2, the simply amazing new way to control, screen, and log calls using your Telos HX6, IQ6, or VX Talk Show systems, helping you to get the best calls to air quickly and easily. X-Screen 2 is a powerful touchscreen interface that connects alongside your VSET 6 or VSET 12 handsets, and even enables you to screen directly on your PC using a USB headset or sound card. X-Screen 2 clearly displays the status of lines and hybrids, quickly captures caller details for screening, and automatically stores a log of calls and easily manages station and show directories of important numbers. There's also a scheduling clock and chat window for instant messaging and visual talkback to other X-Screen workstations on the system. As soon as the line rings, the caller's name is displayed, if they've rung before, and we can look up their location. X-Screen also usefully shows how many times they've called before and when they last called. You can add alerts to identify nuisance or persistent callers before you've even answered the call. To route a call to the VSET or headset, simply click on the handset symbol, exactly as you would use the button on the VSET. Using the other icon on the line, we can hold the call or route the call to a hybrid. Selecting an alternative device will change the icon key, so you'll always know the destination of the call. The tabs on the right-hand side provide more information and control the selected caller. We can add this caller to a caller directory or create a manual entry for someone we call regularly. Calling someone is as simple as just clicking dial on their entry. A free version of X-Screen is included with your HX6, IQ6 and VX Talk Show system. The full version of the software enables the caller database, directories and alerts and other cloud-based features. All Telos customers can try the full version for 3 months by downloading the free trial. More information is available by contacting Broadcast Bionics or your local dealer.
That's pretty cool. You can download it and use it for 3 months, and it works with Telos talk show systems like the HX6 and the VX line of talk show systems. So check it out from Broadcast Bionics. And while you're there, if you go to just bionic.radio, you can see a lot of other cool stuff that they have at Broadcast Bionics that really makes radio workflows work very, very well. All right, we're on the line here. We're talking with Dave Brierley Jones. And Dave, you're coming to us actually not from England today. You're hiding out somewhere else. Where's home for you right now?
Yes, that's correct. I'm in Winnipeg, Canada, Currently there is a lovely white sheet of snow on the ground. It's very, very wintry. But yeah, originally based in the UK, I head up of our North America support team here, and we have a team back in Europe as well who look after things over there. So I'm a Brit in Canada and loving it. Absolutely loving it. Really love it.
You know, I'm pretty good with geography, and I didn't know much about Manitoba, the territory in Canada that's kind of right above Minnesota. So you've got a huge couple of lakes there in Manitoba. I want to say you probably get some incredible lake effect snow. There's pretty high snow drifts during the winter.
Do you know what? My geography is not that great either. But when I saw the size of these lakes, I think one of them can actually fit Britain in it. It's that big. So it just gives you that sort of perspective at how big this country is. You know, I'm used to Britain with a population of 60 million. I think here there's something mid 30s, and it's 20 times the size of Britain. It's crazy.
And most everybody lives along the southern border too, within a couple hundred miles of the southern border. It's pretty sparse when you go farther north. So we're talking about PlayOut One automation software, and you know, we usually don't spend a whole show talking about a product, but automation is absolutely critical to what we do in radio. Automation PlayOut, we often call it PlayOut, and we're gonna, as I mentioned a few times, we're talking about the web thing, about going live, and some of the other things that it can do in terms of streaming. But also, I'm interested in learning about operating this in the cloud. Now, my radio stations, sure, we bought computers, put it on the computers, we run it at the radio station. But I just got to believe that, you know, both of my little radio stations that are using PlayOut One are in small office buildings. I couldn't tell you that the power is really reliable. I can absolutely tell you that the internet at one of our locations is not reliable. I would much rather have my 24/7 automation PlayOut in a data center somewhere where I know there's great power, and I also know that there's great internet, and I just need to get that audio to my transmitter site. And yeah, I realize I'm giving up one problem to maybe have another problem, but I can work on that other problem. Talk to me about cloud integration of PlayOut One. Where do you see that going?
I think it's really the next big thing that we're going to see, certainly in the automation business. You know, we're seeing it already with other parts of radio. You know, Telos, your company, already have put processing in the cloud, which was a big hurdle for a lot of stations. Just as we see with websites, you know, you used to be able to host your website, or you can still can, but most people used to go to a provider, a smaller provider, host their website there. Now, you know, you look at Amazon, the big giant that they are, and it's not just website and data hosting they do. They offer servers and machines as well. So we actually offer a service where we will put PlayOut One on a Amazon machine in a data center. Like you say, it benefits from that great redundancy, that great power. If a server dies, it's no problem. They just turn on another one somewhere else and off you go again. So we call it PlayOut One Cloud, and it's literally you log in using Splashtop or TeamViewer or whatever you want to use, and control it as if it's sat, you know, on a computer somewhere in your building. And it's fantastic. It works really well. We're seeing a lot of intake in this, and I think we're going to see more of this as we go through the next couple of years with COVID and everything, with people working from home. It just makes sense. If people can't be allowed back into buildings, then why do we need such big buildings if we can do it, you know, from a data center, but still retain the live, the local feel that we still need to deliver to our audience?
There are plenty of webinars going on right now among different broadcast engineering groups, and this show isn't the place to do it right now today. But I get to speak to audiences about putting other things in the cloud to make your radio infrastructure more complete there. So, of course, the automation PlayOut needs to go there. And that's been available for a while. I mean, if you want to start a web-only radio station that only did voice tracking and PlayOut of songs, you've been able to do that for a couple or 3 years now, and not at a very high cost. But if you want to have people go on the air live, if you want to mix two or three people together, if you want to be able to take phone calls and have your phone system in the cloud, if you want audio codecs in the cloud to do higher quality audio from, you know, like sports broadcasts or live remote broadcasts, OBs, outside broadcasts, as a lot of people call them, and then have your audio processing in the cloud as well, That's all becoming available now. In fact, the BBC, with their Vylor virtual local radio project, is doing all of that right now. Now, they did it in a kind of expensive way. That's, they didn't do it to save money. They did it to save time. But it's becoming more available. These different elements that I talked about in just the last minute are all becoming available. And we're gonna see this really happening, which I'm excited for my own radio stations, because at some point, we're going to move out of a dusty tin can of a building in a bean field in Mississippi, which is, we got a couple stations that are like that, and put that infrastructure in the cloud and let our folks, they can still come in the building if they want to. They could even voice track or go on live from there, but they'd all, they could also do that from home, get their interviews in different ways than they're doing it now. And hey, they can still have musical groups come in the station. We still do that at one of our stations. They can still come in and have a place to do that. But that infrastructure no longer depends on the horrible electric service in the middle of that bean field. There's going to be other ways to get that done. So enough of all that soliloquy. I see this as a really exciting time, and glad to see that Playout One is one of the people that's looking and actually now doing that cloud. Earlier in the show, you mentioned Playout One Standard and Playout One Pro, and Pro is what we would be looking at in broadcast. How do you price that? And then how do you price that if you guys were to provide the data center space? I just want to give you some money and I get some your system up in the cloud somewhere. How does that work?
So Playout One Pro is very competitively priced. We price it at a monthly subscription, and it all depends on station size and market size. So for example, that one monthly price that gets you support, all the upgrades, and you know, our clients in particular, they may not have an engineer on hand all the time. So we hold that hand for them when they're moving automation system. We give a, I know it's a kind of cheesy thing to say, but it is a personal service. If you ring our North America support line, you're likely to get me most of the time. If you ring our European support team, you're likely to get sometimes Chris, the genius that is behind Playout One. So that's why we do it as a monthly subscription. And then when we talk about the cloud, so we take the Amazon service, and we have individuals within our company that are specialists in the Amazon infrastructure. So if there's a problem, they know how to fix it. And so when you take one of our cloud services, effectively you're paying for that knowledge and the software that goes on top of the box. We maintain it for you. We, again, disable the Windows updates, go through all the pitfalls that we've learned over the last 7 years to make sure that it's going to be running in tip-top condition.
Okay. Okay. If you were to put this in an Amazon cloud, how would a person go about, or could you hold our hand? How would you go about adding other ancillary services that you guys don't sell? Like if I want to put an Omnia 9 software processor also in that same cloud, you know, and may go in the same computer, in fact, how can I get that done? And I know you guys do represent you can put Stereo Tool in there. But what if I want to put something else in there that'll run on the same or a different Windows machine?
So I think at this point, it's worth me just saying, you know, you don't have to take an Amazon cloud from us to run it in the cloud. You can go to your own provider. You can even get your own Amazon cloud. It's just some people, you know, navigating around the Amazon terminology, et cetera. It can be quite complex at times. So that's why we do the hand holding and offer that as a service. But yeah, if you want to procure another Amazon machine to run some processing on, like the Omnia 9 stuff, then absolutely we can procure that machine for you. And get it set up and help you. That's all part of the service we provide. And that's the great thing about Amazon. You just say, I want that machine. And in 20 minutes, it's built and ready to go somewhere.
Oh, that's crazy. I've really got to try that out. We're going to talk a little bit about databases. And I want you to educate me a bit about databases in a broadcast automation system. I've always been a little bit confused about how databases work, why they're necessary, how they get manipulated, how they get updated, how they get broken. Or how they could get broken, and how they get repaired. So, you know, you import a bunch of songs. They may or may not have good title and artist data along with them, with the cuts. I guess maybe first of all, we talk about the import process. So I've got a new Playout One system. Maybe I have some other automation system. Maybe I got a bunch of songs on a hard drive. that I acquired somewhere. Maybe I call, you know, Dave Scott or one of these other companies and buy a library for the format that's going to already have most of what I want. How do things get imported, and how do title and artist go along with that, and the time of the song, and all that jazz? Tell me about that process.
So we spent a lot of time writing our auto importer, which interfaces now with most other automation systems on the market. They'll typically write metadata into the files that are stored on the computers, and we can strip that metadata out. You mentioned Scott Studios and Dave Scott. We work with Dave with his radio music service so that any metadata that's in there comes right in, including the, you know, intro, next to play times, etc., title, artist. And even if the metadata is not in the files themselves, again, most automation systems, most schedulers will have an export function that, you know, writes that information out to a text file or an Excel file. And we can manipulate our importers to read all of that. So we can scrape most data these days.
How is there a process whereby, let's say I have a music scheduling program, and that music scheduling program, its data, as far as the file numbers, the category that it's in, the title and the artist, maybe that needs to match up. Certainly the time of the cut needs to match up. How do those things get synced up to where they match up, where the music scheduling software and the actual database in the computer agree on all the cuts?
So typically in Playout One, we go by what we call the UID. That's the unique identifier. It's a cart number, essentially, and it's alphanumeric. Uh-huh. So it can be letters and numbers. So with Scott Systems and Wide Orbit Systems, that works really well because of the folders that, you know, Scott and Wide Orbit use. Other systems just use numeric, so that's fine as well. The key thing is it's absolutely unique. So there can only be one cart, 1, 2, 3, for example. Now, most schedulers, you know, they'll have a field in there for the cart number. So that's what we tie the two databases together with. We work with Music Master on their Nexus integration. So when you add something into Playout One, it automatically appears in Music Master. If someone makes a change, that title or artist in Music Master, that change is instantly reflected in Playout One. And similarly with Music One as well. So there are two preferred music schedulers, but we integrate with all major traffic and music schedulers in the form of a flat file or an integration like I've just explained.
Okay. And then on the Playout One system itself, you've got the database sitting there on that machine. Let's say I've got a standalone machine like I do at two of my stations. There's a database there. What format, what kind of database is it? Something standard?
So we just use Microsoft SQL Server. Typically, we'll deploy SQL Server Express in bigger organizations where they have, you know, maybe 6, 7, 8 stations in a multi-station cluster. They'll deploy SQL Server full edition so they can do some clever clustering, for example, or replication. But the database is where all the information is held. I call it the brain. That's how I sort of explain it to people. You know, it's the central place where everything plugs into. So if the database isn't functioning correctly, you are going to see problems. Now, again, using our past experience as presenters, producers, programmers, engineers, we've written some tools within our software that does a lot of that database maintenance work for you. So you don't even know that there could be a problem because it was fixed overnight last night, for example. We tried to make it as easy and as simple to use. And that's when we're developing new features for Playout One. It has to pass the simple test. And that's, okay, well, this is what we have now. How can we make it even simpler until we, you know, boil it right down?
How is a database backed up on the same machine? Or do you rely on, like me, to set up Google Drive with a backup and sync?
So typically with our installation service, we'll walk through that with the client and say, okay, it's vital in today's world that you have a backup, whether that be an offsite backup using Google Drive or Dropbox, or an external hard drive. But, you know, even that isn't as foolproof today. If there's a building fire and that hard drive sat in the facility, then it's useless. So we recommend Dropbox or Google Drive. And again, within Playout One Monitor, which is our monitoring service, there's just a few settings you need to tick, and it does it for you every 4 hours incrementally. And one of the features we wanted to put in there, because we've seen it in the past, someone deletes something. We have a recycle bin in Playout One, but we don't delete it from the backup. you know, until X number of days have passed so you can go recover it.
Ah, okay. Okay. That sounds smart. I want to talk, before we take our next break, I want to talk about, you mentioned metadata. I want to talk about RDS or RBDS, as we call it in the U.S. This is where a lot of radio stations, including some of my own, fall flat in terms of competing with a lot of the online services, right? So if you have an Amazon Alexa show with the screen on it, you know, it shows you the title and artist. If you're using Sirius XM satellite radio, it shows you the title and artist. If you're listening to a radio station on a car radio and that station is doing the good job of making sure the metadata is there on the RDS, you see the title and artist and maybe some other information too. What are you guys doing to make that job easy for me, who's not always an expert at getting RDS data on my radio station?
So again, over the past 7 years, we've seen a lot of different metadata options in there that stations have needed. So every time we've created an output, we've said, okay, well, there could be other stations that need that. So in our monitoring software, again, where all the metadata is collated and then sent out, for example, let me think of an example. Air, the website people, there's a nice logo for Air. You click it, you put your details in, and that's it. You don't have to do any fancy scripting or anything like that. So we've worked a lot with a lot of the providers to make it as simple as possible. With RDS, we've gone to most of the manufacturers out there to get the standard, whether that be over IP or serial data. And even if we've not got the metadata output in Playout One as a nice little logo, then we can create a custom output for that particular client so that the metadata gets out there. You mentioned Alexa skills, you know, they're really, really important these days. And that's something we've been working on to create our own Alexa skills. And part of that process, again, was the metadata. How do we make sure the song title appears on the Echo show, for example, and the station logo, et cetera. So it's been a really interesting couple of months doing that project.
It's nice to know, as someone who has done some integration with you know, the various streaming providers or aggregators like TuneIn, you know, directories, and we've done some skills for She Who Shall Not Be Named, because she's right behind me over here, and RDS. You know, it seems like every one of these has been a challenge, and then something breaks because a PC broke or something broke along the way. And then I got to figure it all out again. And it's really delightful that you guys have tried to make this easy, where it's a lot more point and click. Is that what you'd say that it is for most applications these days? It's kind of point and click.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, most people are used to these days. They're used to literally clicking a button, filling out some details, and then, you know, it should just work. And that's what we try to do. That's what we try to develop with all our products. It's that simplicity again. And that really does pull through to the metadata section as well.
So, viewers, listeners at home, if you've been wondering what this Playout One looks like, we're going to have Dave give you a tour through a lot of it, including through the voice tracking here in just a few minutes. This Week in Radio Tech, it's episode 516. I'm Kirk Harnack. And by the way, I didn't say earlier, as usual, I'm coming to you from the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. And I'm delighted to be here, delighted to sit around all this Telos gear. Oh, look, here's an intercom, an IP intercom system. It does the coolest things. Look, I can just... That's actually one of my own radio stations in Greenville, Mississippi. I'm streaming its audio up here to the Zip One, and the Zip One's audio is going into the intercom, so I can easily listen to that. So many possibilities with audio over IP from Telos, and I really appreciate an hour every Thursday off of work to do This Week in Radio Tech and talk to you folks. All right, we'll be right back. When we come back, we're going to be looking at this tour of Playout One, and we'll have some more technical questions and answers for Dave Brierley Jones, who's our guest today. We'll be right back.
Yo, what's up? Live from NAB 2018. Hey, it's Caden. You need to check out Wheatstone and VoxPro 7.1. The upgrades are amazing. If you're a jock, if you're a talent, producer, whatever, a morning show, everyone knows VoxPro, everyone uses VoxPro, everyone loves VoxPro, but now the features for this year, 2018, on 7.1 are amazing. If you're using version 4, 5, 6, and you go to 7, this is exactly what you're missing right here. The features are a game changer. It's going to cut down your editing time by like 80%, depending on what you use VoxPro for. And with version 7.1, Introducing unlimited Praktik button bars right here, hotkeys right here. I'm going to show you coming out of a song.
Bad things. It's a lot of bad things that they wish and wish and wish.
So you're coming out of your song?
Yeah.
Start your next song right here. It's basically an entire production room right on Vox Pro. So it's the Vox Pro we know and love with a ton more features. And now this is the ultimate game changer right here. Effect macros. So instead of hitting your effects button bar and going up here using your mouse for every effect, you do it right here with one click of the mouse, and you're going to cut down your editing time by about 80% without even touching this new sexy black controller. Check it out right here. Wheatstone Vox Pro 7.1 at NAB in Vegas 2018.
And Vox Pro is available from Broadcasters General Store. You can easily get to them at bgs.cc, where you can call them. I've got this number memorized because I've called them so much over the years. 352-622-7700. That's 352-622-7700 for Broadcasters General Store. Great broadcast-oriented people. You ought to check them out for everything you need, including you can. You know, earlier we talked about the X-Screen software from Broadcast Bionics. Well, Broadcast General Store is where you can get that. Of course, you can download that for free for a 90-day trial, too. All right, I'm Kirk Harnack with This Week in Radio Tech in the TELUS Alliance studio. We're talking with Dave Brierley Jones, and he's in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. He's the CEO of Play Out One. All right, Dave, we're going to take a tour of this. And, you know, I need this, too, because I'm the guy that, you know, puts the computer together, gets the Axia driver going, and then I turns off the Windows updates according to your terrific directions. And then I hand it over to the station operations people and say, here, put your music on it. I know nothing else. So I'm about to learn right here. Hopefully we'll get a thumbs up from Suncast as to him being ready to roll our video. And, Dave, oh, good. Okay. Suncast is ready. Dave, anything to tee this up before we start it?
Just if there's any program controllers listening, please don't judge the voice tracks. It's been a long time since I've been behind the mic. So,
yeah, same for me. All right, let's roll that video. And Dave, you're going to give us a little play by play.
Excellent. So, when we see the video here, we're going to basically see the front screen of Playout One, and then we'll, here it is. And then we're going to log into, WebVT. So you'll notice when we log in here, that again, it's that familiarity.
Mm-hmm.
So here we go. Here's our log loading now.
This is in the browser. This looks like an app, but it's in the browser, isn't it?
It's all in the browser. So we can see the hour. We can scroll right the way through and see what's going on. If you want to go and pick a voice track, let's click here. And we'll click to enable our microphone. Mm-hmm. Choose my right mic. There it is. And we're ready to go. You can see on the side there of the voice tracker, that's our triple stack. So this is where you can... play beds and things. No mixer required. Just load a bed in, for example, from your hard drive, like so. And when it loads, we've got a little duck icon as well, the little green. There it is. If I play that, that allows me to duck as I'm talking, for example. So that's how you control your levels. You can also do some other clever stuff. So if we're ready to start a link, we hit the space bar to start. My mic's muted at this point. I'll click it again to unmute and do my
thing. It's Ultravox and Dancing with Tears in My Eyes on Classic Hits. So this is Dave Brierley Jones, and I can tell you that there was a little email that just came in there. Congratulations to that person. They've just won themselves a mention. We'll do that in just a second. Right, on the way, Return of the Mac from Mark Morrison, some Belinda Carlisle. And it wouldn't be a Thursday with Halloween around the corner without some Michael Jackson too.
Award-winning link, I think you'll agree there. So we'll confirm that into the log, and there it goes. And now it's in the browser, but in the Playout system, it's just appeared there as well. So it's instant. As soon as you record, it's off. It's being sent to the station.
Dancing with tears
right now, I can listen to my link.
Classic Hits. So this is Dave Brierley Jones, and I can tell you that there was a little email that just came in there.
So we're checking here just to make sure it's all okay.
With Halloween around the corner, without some Michael Jackson too.
Classic Hits.
So we're happy with that. We could move it around if we want to in the Seg editor and adjust it, but I'm happy with that. And you'll see a little tick has appeared on the far right-hand side just there. That's a sign to the presenter or the disc jockey. The station's received the audio. You're in the clear.
everything's done from your end. So that's just a nice little visual thing there. Now, Playout One's not just, or WebVT is not just a voice tracker. We can actually use it as a library management tool. So I'm going to search for Rockwell because it's Halloween. I can preview it by clicking the play button here. Yeah, that sounds like Rockwell to me.
We can edit it through your browser. Okay.
Yeah, we can edit it and change the hooks, the extras, intros if we want to. Traffic directors are loving this for loading commercials from home. So we're happy with that. And we can now drag this into the log if we've got permission. I know some stations don't allow jocks to free spin, as we call it, but I'm going to break the rules and I've just put Rockwell in next to Michael Jackson. This is going to be a terrible mix, but it's Halloween, so you know, who cares? Right, let's have a look at our newest feature then. So we really wanted to give the possibility for presenters at home to broadcast live. And so what we're going to do here is we're going to enable our new module called Live Mic. And this is what you see when you're
not voice tracking, but actually going live from home.
Yep. So I hit connect and I'm now live to the studio and I've got the studio feed coming back to me, you know, with a quarter millisecond delay or quarter second delay. Or I can listen to the web output if I want to, because I want to, you know, hear it processed. I don't want to hear it all week. And I get to listen to my my link process afterwards. The duck button there to control the levels, because we don't have the faders where we are. So that's a little duck button to control the levels. And so now we'll do a link.
Leo Sayer, and of course, More Than I Can Say on Classic Hits. This is Dave with you until 4 o'clock, and Halloween just around the corner. Some fantastic Halloween tunes coming up very soon. This is quite spooky, isn't it? Word Up Cameo on Classic Hits.
Oh, wow.
And now we'll flick to the stream.
Leo Sayer, and of course, More Than I Can Say on Classic Hits. This is Dave with you until 4 o'clock, and Halloween just around the corner. Some fantastic Halloween tunes coming up very soon. This is quite spooky, isn't it? Word Up Cameo on Classic Hits.
And so what you heard there is when I, because I was ducking the music so I didn't get drowned out by Cameo, when I turn my mic off, the duck goes back to 100%. We also have a little station whiteboard feature here, so you can put live reads and scripts and bits of information if you you want to. So we're really excited by this because, you know, a lot of us are sat at home, you know, we're voice tracking, which is great because we're on the air still, but there's nothing that really, you know, gets the adrenaline going, like doing a live link or a live show from where you are. And it doesn't even have to be a live show. It could be the ball game. It could be an event. There's an election next week. You know, I'm sure there's going to be some breaking announcements to make. So this gives, you know, talent the ability to do this and stations the ability to do it. We're really excited by it. We think it's going to change the studio of the future. I think we talk about the studio of the future, and I think this is it, where I am now, a microphone and you know, a laptop or a Windows machine connected to wherever this is being hosted.
So I, as an engineer, I've got a couple questions. So I believe when I asked about this before, so if I'm doing the WebVT, the voice tracking, and let's say that my home connection is not the best, maybe I'm on DSL and maybe one of the kids is trying to watch Netflix at the same time, and I'm going to have maybe a little bit of packet loss. Well, TCP/IP on the screen, you know, helps correct for packet loss and that kind of thing. But if I'm sending live audio, I guess what I'm asking is, in the WebVT, if I'm recording a voice track, is that audio recorded on my local machine and sent, or is it recorded live across the connection with maybe some packet loss? Which way is that working?
So when I did the voice track, what happens is the audio is cached into the browser when I click on the hour that I'm looking at. My recording is all saved locally. And then once I've finished with it and I'm happy with it, it then uploads in the background back to the station. So there's no real live communication going on, which means, yes, if you are on a slower connection, it's going to take a little bit longer to download the content and upload it, but at least you can still do it. Now, when I did the live link just then, that is a direct connection. So if you hit connect and you hear the station audio coming back at you and it's blah, 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 then it's probably wise to voice track instead of doing it live.
Sure. Well, I think this is amazing because you offer the both strategies, right? I've talked with a number of engineers who have who over this COVID social distancing, working from home time, they have had to set up people at home. And not everybody at home has a very good internet connection. Some do, some don't. And some broadcast operations have just decided, look, we're not going to do any live shows. It's all going to be voice tracked. Some of it may be just in time voice tracking, 5 minutes before, 2 minutes before, 10 minutes before. But we're not going to go absolutely live unless we have some breaking news or some reason that we have to, because of packet loss. And they don't want to have that on the air. If you're transferring a file, TCP/IP will work and work and work until that file is transferred, even if it's going slow. So this is great that you're offering on voice tracking the best of that world. The transfer takes place. The file will eventually arrive intact, all correct. But of course, the live mic, I guess you're using probably Opus or something that's built into the browser for that audio transfer.
Okay. That's correct. Yes. Yeah. I was actually speaking to a client yesterday, a potential client, and they were asking, how quickly can we do a link voice tracked and then have it on the air? Because their current system, it took, I think, 45 minutes from, recording to being, live to the studio. And I said, with this, if you've got a fast internet connection, we've done it with tests. There could be 50 seconds left on the song. If it's a short link, then that can be on the air within 50 seconds. So it really is flexible in that way. And a lot of clients that I speak to are loving it because they can give that traffic report right up until, a minute to go in case something happens. They can just pop that in there and they know it's going to be up to date within a minute.
Now, I've talked about poor internet connections. More and more people at home do have a really good internet connection. I've got fiber here. Typically, it's close to a gig at our station in Hawaii. We've got a gig there. It's beautiful all the time. It's just like being there. Let's say that you do put your PlayOut One cloud in the cloud somewhere, and you want to do live broadcasts. You can do this, and in fact, you could even have a multi-person live broadcast, as long as you mix their mics together and then feed it to your browser so that everybody in the room can hear each other with zero latency, and then send that on up using your live program. What did you call that? Live mic. Live mic. You could have more than one person in the same room going up to that. So that sounds like it could be a really good more reason why this can operate in the cloud, even with a multi-person morning show or afternoon show or talk show. That sounds pretty cool.
I mean, that machine we were looking at there, Classic Kits, it's our demo station where we test all the bits and pieces on. And that's running on an Amazon server. And I was sat here, at my desk as I am now. Did that this morning. And it worked just great. We didn't want to go down the route of recreating a clean feed or an IPDTL. This is something for, like you say, a presenter or a jock to just stay in the browser, stay with the familiarity that they're used to, and connect and do a live link. As you say, if you wanted to have multiple people on that, then yeah, sure. As long as they connect into you and then you send that audio out again, then that's no problem at all.
I think one thing that we talked about briefly earlier was your service that's built in called Monitor. And I think you can – what can it do? Can it set me up so that if somebody forgets to load the log for tomorrow, it can let me know that by a certain time during the day?
Oh, yes. We've all been there where we've forgotten to run the log or, the traffic's not quite made it through or there's been missing audio and that spot's not made it on until Monday. So we've all learned from these past faux pas, shall we say. And so we've built in processes into what we call Monitor that tries to emit those from your radio station. So if you set up the alerts, you choose a time to get that alert. So 5 p.m. is always a good one, just before we head out the door for a Friday. And it will email you and say, hey, Monday, no traffic log, or Sunday, no music log. And at least you can fix that. And within the WebVT system, there's a monitor section which shows a full status breakout. So you can actually see that from home. Or we have a client that likes to drive to work and have that show on his Tesla. That's always fun. I think he manipulates the log as well in the on-air studio whilst he's parked up.
As one might expect, you guys have an FTP client in this, so you download shows. Some of our stations, for example, play the John Tesh or Big Boy. Shows like this come in. I guess PlayOut One does that too, right?
Yeah, Murphy, Sam and Jody, for example, lots of stations we do taking that morning show. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we have a program called File Copy that can be set up once to download the right files and, you know, download them to the right carts. If it expects, you know, 30 segments for Murphy, Sam and Jody and there's only 29, it will email you and say, hey, there was only 29 today. You might want to check on why that may be. So there's clever things like that. It can do Dropbox, internet. We also have a client who doesn't have that good internet. I think the playout system is actually at the transmitter. And so the recon logs for the traffic are actually uploaded back to an FTP site via File Copy as well. So it's our little Swiss Army knife that we use to go and grab external content and bring it into Playout One.
You could actually put this at the transmitter site, couldn't you?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We do have a few clients that not only have it at the transmitter site, but they also have a copy of Playout One at their office. The two are in sync, so they can load commercials. They can, you know, do the fine editing of the intros, the heads and tails locally, and then that's transferred over the internet to the other site as well using our synchronizer software.
Wow, I did not know about this. So two systems can stay in sync.
Yep, relatively in sync. So they're not going to be in real time. They're going to be behind by 30 seconds. But, you know, as long as there is one system that's designated as the master pushing the changes out, then, absolutely, they can be loaded. Audio could be loaded miles away and then transferred over, ready to play out, and all the hard work's been done.
So I could, for example, notice on the air, hey, every time we play this Michael Jackson song, the intro is too loud and it muffles the link, the jock talking over it. I need to draw that down. So you could do that locally on one machine, and within a short time, it appears on the on-air machine.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. And you can edit heads and tails in WebVT as well. So that was the first way we used to do this synchronization. But with WebVT now, if the internet's great at the transmitter site, you just connect using WebVT and off you go. You're editing it live and off.
Yeah. That WebVT is so cool. I'm totally blown away by that convenience. Hey, another thing I'm blown away with is our sponsor, Angry Audio. And we've talked about doing shows from home. If you want to put callers on the air from home, well, this is one way to get that done. You don't need a telephone hybrid to do that. You just need this Bluetooth audio gadget from Angry Audio. Their website is angryaudio.com. But the Bluetooth gadget, you just pair it up with your phone. It's got an easy pair button on the front, spring-loaded, so you don't accidentally leave it in the pairing position. You let go of it, it comes out of pairing. And you pair your phone with this, and a number of people can pair their phones. Let's say you've got several different announcers that come in and out of the building. They can pair their phones, and that means that you can take a phone call, a FaceTime call, a messenger call, a WhatsApp call, a Skype call. You can take any of those and have it come through your audio console. And also your voice through the audio console can get fed, use a mixed minus bus or an aux bus where it's mixed in, can get fed back to the caller. And you get the best audio quality possible by using the Bluetooth audio gadget from Angry Audio. At Angry Audio, you want to check them out because if you like to use Studio Hub, and if you don't know what that is, you need to learn about it. Studio Hub is a great way to wire up your studios, especially your audio over IP studios, with these easy adapters. RJ45 and Cat5 cable is what carries your audio from place to place. And then for the last foot or so, you get into your XLR connectors on the back of your gear. With that, there's a male XLR, there's female XLR, there's a quarter-inch tippering sleeve, and even bare wire if you want to, you know, go to something else, if you got some Phoenix connectors that you need to go to. Check it out, because Angry Audio is now Studio Hub, Studio Hub Plus. So check that out at their website, angryaudio.com. Hey, our other sponsor that I want to mention to you is our friends at Max Connect Wireless. We got to use this last week at the event here in Nashville when the Next Best Thing caravan came through Nashville, broadcast live from here. This worked just terrifically. Well, except when I went into the Faraday cage known as the RV. But everywhere on the grounds, it worked just terrific. The Max Connect Wireless modem is a 4G LTE modem that gives you prioritized data, prioritized over everybody else on that cell site. And your data stays prioritized until it gets where it's going. Prioritize above everybody else except first responders. Yeah, the police and fire get to have that data. But it shouldn't interfere with this. You get your own channels with Max Connect Wireless. You can be at a stadium full of people. Okay, it's COVID-19. I guess you won't be at a stadium full of people. But you get my drift. You can be on a busy, busy cell site, other people working from home, other people on their cell phones, maybe making their own hotspots, MiFis and all that, taking up all the bandwidth at the cell site. You get your bandwidth. This one right here, I've got 5 megabits per second up and down configured for this. Works great for video. If you saw last week's show, you know that works just fine. Chris Tobin uses these pretty often. He gets out more than I do. And you're going to check this out at Max Connect Wireless. You can check out their website at maxconnectwireless.com. And you have your choice of carriers for the data. You can go with Verizon or AT&T or Sprint. Any of those carriers work just great. Maybe you've got a favorite carrier or a carrier that you know works well at your transmitter site. So you can put a MaxConnect Wireless at your transmitter site. You can take one with you to do live remote broadcast, to do sports remotes. You've got options. And this particular one right here has both Verizon and AT&T in it. So if one of them's not doing so well where I am, you can switch to the other and probably get a very good connection with the other one there. Check that out. Thanks a lot, MaxConnect Wireless, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right. Well, our time is almost done, but we're going to have a tip of the week from Dave Brierley Jones with Play Out One. Dave, is there some word of wisdom that you might be able to leave our viewers and listeners with today?
I've got something that I think probably would be quite useful, but hey, that Max Connect, that'd be really, really, really well with Play Out One WebVT. So 5 megabits.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Up, 5 megabits down. Yeah. Fantastic.
We should do a demo of that. In fact, 1 week, because I've got WebVT at one of my stations, so we should just connect and use that and show it here on the show.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. My tip, recently I was introduced to this piece of software by another friend of mine. LastPass, you've probably heard of it, Password Manager.
Yeah.
I was one of those guys that used to store it in a Google Sheet and realized this probably wasn't the safest thing to do. So swapping to LastPass, and not just my passwords, but my driving license and my passport and things, being here in Canada, you have to often, provide a passport for something. So having that just on your phone or your laptop synced across devices, I found it really, really useful. So I would definitely recommend LastPass if you're not using a password manager.
I'm going to second you on that because LastPass has been around for quite a long time as a password manager. And like most of them, they've had a little security issue here or there. I don't believe that they've ever had a lot of passwords stolen, but they've had possible ways to break in, and they fixed it. That's the difference between LastPass and some of the other guys. LastPass, if you ever watch the Security Now show with Steve Gibson, this guy is great on security, and he absolutely heartily endorses LastPass, even though he's not paid to. And I use it myself. In fact, I think I pay whatever their annual fee is to get more services or get it on more computers, whatever bump you get up, because it's worth it. And they even LastPass will warn you, hey, we noticed you're using this password on this site, plus you're using it, Kirk, on 13 other sites. You might want to consider changing that password on this site so it's unique to this site. And some of my banking passwords, they're not even pronounceable. I just have it come up with a random string and I don't have to remember it. The only one I have to remember is LastPass's master password. And if I forget that, they even have ways to recover that if you think about it in advance, like printing out a one-time password. Dave, I'm glad you mentioned that. I love LastPass. And it has helped me so very much. And you're right about storing other documents, too. I do that as well, to store high security documents that I don't want other people to have, but I want to be able to get to them myself.
I really like it as well. You log into the website and you I've set up for two-factor authentication. So every time I log in, I have to, approve it on this device. So I know that if it does go off and I've not tried it, I'm obviously not there, am I? So I'm going to decline that. So.
I haven't had that happen yet, but that's great, great advice. I appreciate that. Dave, best of luck to you and to Play Out One. We're using it at a couple stations, and we may be converting more of them if we continue to like it, which I think we will. A lot of good features in it. So we're going to let you, if people want more information on that, the website's pretty easy, right?
Yeah, playout1.com. You can find you know, full comparisons there between the Pro and the Standard. And if anyone is looking for a demo of WebVT, then just get in touch with us and we're happy to schedule that in.
Good. And if anybody wants to do voice tracking on one of my stations, we'll show you WebVT. And you can voice track our station for free. All right. Dave, I appreciate you being on. Thanks so much. Good luck to you. It's time to go. I want to say thanks a lot to Suncast, the producer of This Week in Radio Tech. Great job, Suncast. Thank you. And also to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. You'll find other terrific podcasts on GFQ at gfqlive.tv or gfqnetwork.com. Check that out. And hey, we're going to be with you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Be sure you sign up for the Nautel webinars. I mentioned that because, you know, here it is Thursday and the next one's not till next week on Tuesday. So go ahead and do it now. They'll send you a reply email and you can just put it in your calendar, whether you use Outlook or Google or whatever. Put it in your calendar and join us for the Nautel webinars. And if you patronize our sponsors, that'd be great. Broadcast Bionics at bionic.radio. Also, Broadcast General Store, Max Connect, and Angry Audio. It makes a big difference if you'll patronize them. Buy something from them, okay? And let them know that you heard it right here on This Week in Radio Tech. We'll see you next week. You guys take care. Bye-bye.